Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Larry Cave, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Chicago, and I'll be the host for the presentation today. Today is Sunday, December 29th, 2024. The share ID numbers for Friday, December 27th, are the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting, that number is 22,028. So that's 22028. For the 10 a.m. Meeting, 22,029, 22029. So this morning, A Vision for You presents Fork in the Road. You know, the concept of personal agency, I was thinking about this. Personal agency in a human being refers to the capacity to make choices, right? To act independently, exert control over one's actions and decisions. And it includes things like autonomy and decision-making and intentionality. And this ability to choose is intended to be good. I mean, you know, after all, it's a gift from our Creator. You know, sometimes I think of it as it's sort of built into our DNA, perhaps. But here's the complication for people like us. You know, when we arrive to these rooms, you know, we learn that we have no choice when it comes to eating our alcoholic foods. You know, if we're a true compulsive overeater, our willpower is of no use. We simply cannot marshal our own will in any sustainable way. You know, we try, but we just can't stay stopped. And it's not exactly what I wanted to hear when I got here, but our text says the fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, sure, have lost the power of choice in drink. And we're confronted with the reality that we have no mental defense against taking that first bite. So it's like we're biologically mandated to eat more of the same alcoholic foods once we trigger that physical allergy. And what's even more insidious is that even when the food is down, eventually I'm going to be driven back to the very thing that's killing me due to the mental obsession. So it's a maddening cycle. And the big book describes what must happen unless I can have an entire psychic change, which for me is synonymous with a spiritual awakening. There's very little hope of my recovery. I have to be brought into relationship with power. So joining us this morning to share her personal story of transformation as the result of the 12 steps is Kelly G, a recovered compulsive overeater from Florida. And Kelly is dedicated to our 12-step way of life. She's committed to carrying a message of hope to our fellowship. And it's really with great appreciation that we welcome Kelly to the line this morning. Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning, Larry. Good morning, everybody. I am Kelly G., recovered compulsive overeater in Florida. And what an honor it is to be able to do a special edition. I feel overwhelmed with gratitude. And, you know, I think about it whenever there is a special edition and I get all cozy and I'm like, I wonder who's speaking. And then I wake up this morning and it's like, oh, it's me. So I pray that I say something that resonates with somebody and that can just light that fire in them to choose recovery for today. So God, I pray that you speak through me. Help me see this book through this text, through your eyes, through your heart, and please help me give your children the strength and hope that you've so generously given me. So with that, let's get the party started. The topic today, a fork in the road, that's something that it came to me as I was driving to Naples over the holidays to visit my family. And I was like, God, please help me come up with a topic of what I'm going to talk about. And when I read the big book with my sponsees, I always look for these places where we have a choice. There is this fork in the road, right, where we can either choose this way or that way. And I did a lot of hiking growing up, and I just remember, you know, on these trails, it was like this way or that way. And it was like, wait, which way is the right way to go? And so, you know, you can choose one way, and then all of a sudden there's it just doesn't seem like it's the right way. There's trees, the path really isn't clear, it's dirty, it's muddy. And then we're like, no, let's go back. And we go the other way. And it's like, oh, I see the stream, I see the lake. Oh, this is the right way, right? So I want, if anyone has their big book handy and you're feeling like following along, I want to talk about the different forks in the road that stood out to me in our text as I go through it. So I want to start with page 25, with There is a Solution. And the last paragraph on 25, it says, we had but two alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could, and the other to accept spiritual help. And so I'm that visual person, right, where you see that you have these two signs. And for so long, going to the bitter end with my intolerable situation was more appealing to me than choosing spiritual help because I didn't know what that meant. In fact, I didn't really care to know what that meant because I was so deep in this endless pit where my misery was all that I knew. And when something is known to me, that's where I stay because the fear and the discomfort of the unknowing was seemed equally unbearable. So let me stick to what I know because my misery was my permanent state. And eventually, I had to choose the path of spiritual health, right? So that's the first time where I see that I have a choice here. And I already know what the path is going on the bitter end the way I've been doing. And I don't know what the spiritual path looks like. But it got to the point for me where I knew that any other path besides the one that I was on was the right way to go. And I had to get to that point myself. I had to continue to go down what I knew, what was known to me, what was comfortable to me, in order to realize, you know what, anything but that path is where I want to be. The next part, let's go to page 42, and it's the last full paragraph. And on 42, it says, the last full paragraph towards the middle there. It meant I would have to throw several lifelong conceptions out of the window. So what that means is I can either hold on to these lifelong conceptions of myself, of what I believe in a higher power, or I can throw away all lifelong conceptions of a higher power to gain that spiritual answer. So for me, I hold on to things for dear life. I look at it, if you think visually like I do, right? It's like you're holding on to this glass, this broken glass, and you're clenching your fists so tight, and your hands are bleeding, like it hurts. But it's like, no, I don't want to let go. I don't want to let go. I don't want to let go. I'm just holding on for dear life, but it's causing me so much pain. So I can do that, or I can let go of that glass and just see what other ideas are out there. And that's where the spiritual answer lies. I, for so long, was just clenching on to those fixed ideas that I'm going to get a grip with this. I'm going to figure this out. I'm going to get to the root of it. My discipline, my strong will. I want to look good when the summer comes. I have a wedding coming up. I can do this. And I realized, you know, through the hard way, of course, that I can't. I can't. That squeezing that glass hurts. It hurts. I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to feel this anymore. Page 44 in We Agnostics, the second paragraph. To be doomed an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives. So one sign is saying to be doomed an alcoholic death. The other path is to live on a spiritual basis. Same thing here. We're faced with a choice. Do we want to stick with the known or go to the unknown? And it threatens us here. In the next paragraph, it says we must find a spiritual basis of life or else. That's a threat that the big book tells us. There is no other way. So a spiritual basis or bust. And when I get that warning, when I read this, I realize that this is the only solution. It's spiritual or else it's just not going to work. And I can take what I want and leave the rest when it comes to meetings, right? And people share on the meeting. But I can't take what I want and leave the rest when it comes to this text. I can only take it and keep it and hold it and live by it and breathe it and live it. That's the only thing that I can do. And so sometimes for me, as an undisciplined addict, I have to be threatened because I will find every single loophole and every single approach to manipulate my way out of it and do the, yeah, but also, but how about, but if, and I can't, I don't have that luxury today. On page 48 in We Agnostics, it talks about how it's the last full paragraph on that page, and it says, it is being constantly revealed as mankind studies the material world that outside appearances are not inward reality at all. And this hits home for me so much. And I want to share, I want to weave into my experiences as I go through these different parts of the big book. And my experience is this. I've been in program over 12 years, and I had 8.5 years of abstinence. And through those 8.5 years, I had it all. I had the body, I had the job, I had the relationship, I had the car, I had the condo, the family. I had everything. But guess what? I had no God. And if you saw me on the outside, you would say, wow, wow, that girl has it all. And the truth is that my outward appearance had no correlation with the emptiness that I felt inside. And December 8th of 2020, after 8.5 years of being abstinent, not recovered, but abstinent, even though I didn't really know the difference, I had picked up one granola bar in aisle 4 one afternoon because I couldn't stop thinking about it. I just could not stop thinking about it. And the voice was so loud that I'd rather shut it up than experience one more moment in this discomfort. And I said to myself as well, is what difference does it make? Yeah, I look great. Yeah, I'm the smallest weight I've ever been. Yeah, my jeans always fit. I'm super tiny. People look at me. I get the attention. But I was so dead inside that it was all a waste. I was almost like, God, you wasted this on me when someone else could really appreciate it. I wanted to punish myself. It was my fault. But the truth is that I didn't live on a spiritual basis. So where it says, or else I'm going to be miserable, or else there's nothing to live for. Because for me, I was so dead inside. And that granola bar led to 80 pounds and 11 months of wanting to die. And when I had all these urges, I mean, people in program 2 had a lot of pushback. Like, really? You look great. Like, oh, I don't really notice. or doesn't seem like you struggle, you have those thoughts. I felt like for a while I wasn't taken seriously because I looked good. And the truth is, just like the big book says, outward appearance is not inward reality at all. And I had to wear my misery, I felt like, in order to be screaming with the amount of pain that I was in. And I would eat at people and see how miserable I am, see how little effort. I would not do my dishes. I would not make my bed. I wouldn't shower. I didn't even care about wearing deodorant. I wear the same dress every day. I had stains on my clothes. I had a white couch with tomato sauce and ice cream all over it. I was a pig. I was a pig. And I didn't care because I didn't care about me because I had nothing inside. And when my relationship ended and I switched jobs and I had to move and all these things, I'm like, food kept me company. Like, that's all I had to live for. And for those 8.5 years, you wonder, well, how did she stay abstinent? Guess what? I didn't leave the rooms. I went to meetings almost every day. My best friends are in this program. I would stay connected with people every day. But the thing is that it's a relationship with me and God. Till this day, I do put my sponsor on a pedestal. I love her to pieces, and I care about what she thinks, and I want what she has. But at the end of the day, she continues to direct me to the point that it's only what God thinks. It's me and God. It's always about my relationship with God. So for those 8.5 years, I didn't do 10 steps. I sponsored, but I wasn't walking the walk. I was going through the motions, and I was following a food plan, and I was abstinent, and I had a relationship, and I traveled, and I had those kind of freedoms. But all of that has an expiration date. God kept me abstinent for so long. What a gift. So anyway, when I was wearing all that weight, a girlfriend of mine told me to listen to a podcast. And I was like, sure, I can do that. And I listened to a podcast of this woman who talked about a dog wearing one of those cones when it gets neutered. I guess that's the word. I don't have dogs. And you have this cone and you just can't really do much. And it was like, I felt like I needed a cone on my head, right, to not be able to eat, to have something be a buffer between me and the food. Anyway, this podcast is brilliant. And I called this woman after the podcast, not asking her to sponsor me, just like, hey, love the podcast, really helped, thanks so much. And she didn't answer, left her a voicemail. And then 2 weeks later, I get a call. And at this point, this was like rock bottom for me. Like, this was rock bottom where I remember I was on my couch and I had gone to an AA meeting that morning. I'm not in AA. I just needed 12 steps. I didn't care what it was. And I went to an AA meeting. After the AA meeting, I couldn't stop thinking about food. I would squeeze my temples together on my head, screaming, God, please stop. Please help me. And I wouldn't feel anything. And I remember going and saying, calling my parents. And I said, I'm coming over. And I'm on the phone with a treatment center as I'm driving there. And I pack up a pair of leggings and an Old Navy maxi dress. It was blue that I barely washed, but it fit because it was huge. And I said, I'm not leaving my parents' house until I like go into treatment because I can't be left alone. Like, I am eating till oblivion and it is out of my control. It was just a new level of powerlessness where it was unbearable. Like, I needed to be locked up. So I go to my parents' house. It's like 3 in the afternoon. The blinds down and I just lay in my bed like one of those snow angels right in the middle of my king size bed, my legs out, my arms extended over my head, just like, God help me. And I have this pounding migraine, like level 10. And my phone rings. My phone's on my stomach. So I'm just like, just a bump on a log. And my phone rings. I'm like, who is this? And I pick up anyway. And it's the woman who did the podcast. And she's like, I'm so sorry I haven't gotten back to you. And we ended up talking for 45 minutes. Look, I don't have any room to sponsor, but I hear your misery and I want to help you. So just call me tomorrow at 10 and let's talk again. And I was like, okay. So no interest in her sponsoring me. She's not available to sponsor, but I agree and relate to every single word that she said. And sometimes it's so much easier to talk to a stranger that you don't even know because we're in program together. So it's like you could literally tell them your life and it feels like home. And that's what this woman felt like. I'm like all of a sudden getting emotional because it was just like so powerful. And the next morning I call her and she was like, I'm going to give you 110% if you can give me 110%. But God led me to realizing that like I need to carry the message like to you. And this woman has kids, she's married. And she gave me 110%, and we worked this book every single day for 30 days straight, and it changed my life. She changed my life, and God changed my life, and it was the most powerful 30 days I ever had. And the sacrifice and service that she gave to me is like unlike anything that anyone's ever given to me, like the best gift. So I'm just so grateful for that because that's how I want to give my heart and soul to anybody that I work with because all it takes is for someone else to believe in you. Like I had no faith that this was going to turn around for me this time around. You know, people would say you had 8.5 years. If you've done it once, you've had 8.5 years. That means nothing. The only thing that I had were day ones wrapped together into 8.5 years. That's what anything is. That's what any amount of time is. And so we started working together November 18th of 2021. And by December 21st, I would say, I was recovered. And it was I like couldn't believe it, but I was rewired and I stayed at my parents' house for those 30 days, which my dad, he's definitely not the warm and fuzzy. And till this day, he has a 2-night maximum. I'm only allowed to stay at my parents' house for 2 nights because after that, he says he gets claustrophobic. So I can't hear anybody right now, obviously on the line, but that's ridiculous. So I hope that makes someone laugh because I can do nothing but laugh about that. But anyway, so I come home and I never wanted to step foot in my apartment again. You know, it's one of those things where I didn't feel safe. Like this was a crime scene. I didn't want to go back to this. And when I got back here to my apartment, I was like, I'm okay. Like my apartment's gorgeous. Like, I can look at the water. Like, this is my space. And I got a new couch. And I got a new bed. And I got some artwork. And I was like, this is amazing. Like, my apartment's beautiful. And it was like a whole new safe haven. And the only thing that changed was between my ears. That was the only thing that changed. I want to turn to page 50, where it talks about that first paragraph. We talked of intolerance while we were intolerant ourselves. We missed the reality and the beauty of the forest because we were diverted by the ugliness of some of its trees. And I was living in a beautiful forest. I were the ugly trees. I were the thorns and the branches and the twigs and all of it. And I would just rip myself apart. But when I had a clear mind and I have this channel of sunlight and warmth that had always been there within me, but it was blocked. When I could finally see, I was like, oh my gosh, like, it's beautiful here. And I always said I would break my lease. Like, after I went to my parents' house, I was like, I'm never stepping foot in the building. And I looked at other apartments. I'm like, I can't do this. And I'm like trying to figure out how to break my lease. And let me tell you something, 4 years later, I'm still in this apartment and I love it. I love it. And it's a safe haven to me. It's crazy to think that a place where I didn't even trust myself, that I never wanted to see again, that has my horror stories in it, is a place that I feel so good in. So the way I see the world today, it's almost like I walk around and I feel like I'm in my own world sometimes in like the best way possible. You know, sometimes when I'm working out, I live by the water and I'll see these like butterflies and there'll be like two of them. And I know butterflies are very spiritual to many people. And like, I used to never be able to see anything besides catching a reflection of myself in a window and just wanting to die. That's the only thing I saw, how puffy my cheeks were, how my rings didn't fit my fingers anymore, how my ankles were so swollen. That's what I noticed, the rolls in my back. That's what I could see. But I couldn't see the beauty. And today, I see leaves that are shaped as hearts on the ground. I notice everything. I see palm trees, right? That's where I live. I notice the ridges in the trees. I notice boats out in the distance, the colors. I pay such attention to detail. Like, my mind is so clear and all the colors and my emotions are so vivid. I can be driving in the car and like I can just start tearing up to like a country music song that I love. Like, before, I was just so angry. Like, I felt nothing. I was just so numb. And that's the way I wanted it. I didn't want to feel. And today, to be able to like tear up while talking about like how much I love my sponsor and the fellowship and this program and how like this is the only place or else, I love that. Like, I'm so clear and connected that I can feel today. And it's not always pretty. So let me take you back to my story. So I got recovered December. I finished the steps December 21st, let's say. December 25th, it's Christmas. I'm Jewish. I don't celebrate Christmas. And usually on Christmas, it's a really quiet day for me. So I decided, let me clean out my wardrobe with my mom and donate a bunch of garbage bags full of clothes. And that's what we're going to do. So I do that. And I take out a bunch of garbage bags to my incinerator on my floor. And the door to the heavy door to the garbage had a piece of metal, a sharp metal, sticking out of the bottom. And when I threw out my garbage, the metal of the door sliced my heel open and severed my Achilles. And I was gushing blood. And we run to urgent care. It was 3:20. Urgent care closed at 3:45 on Christmas Day. And I get there and they see me immediately and they're like, oh no. This is beyond our realm. Rushed to the hospital, had to wait in the waiting room. I'm just praying to God. Like, I just got recovered here, okay? Like, yeah, I'm confident. I'm not even confident, not the word, but like I feel secure and grounded in God. But like, God, don't be testing me this early. You know what I mean? Like, I believe in you and I trust you, but like not as much as you think I do. And I'm in the waiting room. The doctor finally sees me, wraps me up in a cast, 13 stitches, and I leave in crutches and a wheelchair. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, this has got to be a joke. Like, part of my part of my recovery is being able to exercise and go for a walk, and I have all this weight to lose, and I'm... Anyway, let me tell you, I was in a wheelchair for probably over a month. I couldn't do anything for myself. I couldn't even stand on 2 feet. I couldn't put any weight on my foot. I would take showers with my head flipped over the sink. My mom had to walk me to the bathroom, pull down my pants. Like, this is the kind of situation I was in. And I'm a month deep into recovery. Like, you've got to be kidding me. And guess what? I had never been so grateful in my life. It forced me to dive into program even harder. I got to go to meetings every single day. I got to make calls every single day. And you know what? I didn't have to gain weight and be miserable sitting in a wheelchair. I was able to eat my abstinent food and lose weight sitting in a wheelchair because I was in recovery. And guess what? I didn't even care about the wheelchair that much because I said to myself, this is temporary. Some people are permanently in this state of being in a wheelchair, and that's hard. Like, this is temporary. And what better way than to do service and give back and dive into sponsoring? And this is going to be part of my story. Like, life is going to throw me curveballs, and eating over it was never my solution. It actually didn't even cross my mind. Like, I was so free from the food and the obsession and the allergy and from self and all of it. There was just so much, there was so much good, because everything is good when I'm abstinent and in recovery and I'm not blocked. When I don't have the phenomenon of craving, when I don't have the obsession of the mind, there's so much room for everything else. And the best way for me to measure how I'm doing in my spiritual fitness is when I turn to page 52, where it talks about the bedevilments. And here's what they say. I'm going to say it in the I form. I was having trouble with personal relationships. I couldn't control my emotional natures. I was a prey to misery and depression. I couldn't make a living. I had a feeling of uselessness, and I was full of fear. I was unhappy. I couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was that not a basic solution of the bedevilments more important than whether we should see newsreels of lunar flight? Of course it was. So these bedevilments are such a good barometer of how I'm doing with my spiritual fitness. And let me tell you something. What a blessing it is to be doing this special edition today at this point in my life, because life's knocking me down in the face. I just got fired from my job on Friday, a job I did not like, and God did for me what I could not do for myself, but still, ow, hard, curveball. I refer to it as a plot twist. Right? When things happen, I'm like, well, that was a plot twist, right? Didn't see that coming. Was dabbling into a certain relationship that kind of just disappeared, cold turkey, uncomfortable, didn't see that coming. Full of fear. Okay, what's next? You know, what is next for me? Can't really apply or find a new job with the holidays. It's just not really the right time. It's not even the right time to get fired during the holidays, but not my choice. And you know what? All this information, all this data for me continued to turn inward, And that's what I'm doing. You know, even if you ask yourself these questions and you're like, oh, shoot, like, let's say you do have, you know, days wrapped up under your belt, or let's say you're recovered, or let's say you're sponsoring and have five sponsees and you're fighting with your husband and your children, like, they hate you and everything's going wrong. It's like, when I look at these things and I'm like deep into them, I'm like, okay, I need a reset. So whether it be reworking the steps again, which I've done several times recovered, it's a great thing to do. It just brings me back to, like, do I have like 12, 10 steps that I need to do right now? Or did I spend time with God this morning? Or maybe I need like a walk by myself without music and just like talking out loud to God freely. This is just a really good barometer to check in with myself. And it doesn't mean I'm on the cusp of relapse. It doesn't mean my recovery is shaky. It just means that my spiritual fitness is off, and it's information, it's data. You know, I think there's a lot of fear, and I guess I can speak for myself, but I'm sure many relate, right? There's this fear, uh-oh, like, am I going to relapse? Like, all these things are going wrong, and like, I haven't spent much time with God yesterday and today, and you know, I went out to dinner and like the bread basket just looks so good to me. Or like I went to the grocery store and the bakery section smelt so good. Why does it smell so good? And it's like, guess what? No matter how much time I have under my belt, the bakery section is always going to smell good. Like it's always going to smell good. In the mall, when I pass the Cinnabon, like guess what? It's always going to smell good. Like I don't have to be on the cusp of relapse because something smells good. Like I'm also human. Like my smell doesn't go away, right? Like something that smells good all of a sudden doesn't make me nauseous. So I'm human. And I encourage anybody who just feels like there's a pebble in their shoe and doesn't know what it is. And it's just like, wait a minute, God, like I worked the steps and I feel, you know, I'm supposed to feel like this and there's that pebble in your shoe, bedevilment. That's always a great barometer for me. Another fork in the road that I want to talk about is page 53. It's in the middle of the paragraph. And it says, the middle paragraph, when we became alcoholics, crushed by a self-imposed crisis, we could not postpone or evade. We had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What is our choice to be? So I have a decision to make here. God is or he isn't, right? And if he isn't, it's me. Guess what? It's me or God, because that's really the question, right? And sometimes I choose me. Yeah, I said it. Sometimes I choose me. But guess what? Every time that I choose me, I pay for the consequences. And it's not God punishing me. It's more just a reminder like, oh, right. It's not me. It's God. God is. But it can't be me and God, right? It's either or. So I also need reminding of this. And when there's moments where I'm at some, you know, even today, it's like, you know, it's hard to figure out when I'm looking, let's say, for a new job or just any kind of direction in life. It's like, well, I have to do the footwork, right? So it gets confusing sometimes for me because it's me doing the footwork. It's me on the interview. It's me getting the job. But you know what? It's the wind beneath me. It's the fire inside of me, and that is not me. So I'm the skeleton for God that is in me. And I want to bring up on page 57, this is the nitty-gritty. This is the authentic, vulnerable stuff that jumps out at me in the big book, where it says in the first paragraph, top paragraph on 57, save for a few brief moments of temptation, the thought of drink has never returned. And there's a couple things here. Temptation does exist. And I want to bring that up because you hear a lot about, I mean, I'm free from the food. I'm absolutely free. I have no urges. Doesn't call me. I am majority of the time pretty free. I can eat out. I can travel. I enjoy eating out with friends. I enjoy the other night, my cousins, aunts, uncles, we had this table of 14 and we were out to eat. And I kind of just wanted my home, like my accident food at home that night. I was sort of in this like, I don't know, when life's kind of acting a little out of whack, the things that I can control, which is like my accident food, cooking with the exact amount of oil that I want and the exact protein and just have what I want in the cleanest fashion when I'm feeling like my life's kind of all over. But then I said to myself, you know what? It's not about the food tonight. It's about the company. And I remember I do remember it just happened, but I was sitting at this long table And it was like, whoa, like I'm not sticking out like a sore, excuse me, I'm not sticking out like a sore thumb. I used to bring my food scale everywhere when I eat out. And for me, recovery is not bringing my food scale when I eat out. I remember being at the birthday party 2 years ago, and I paid for one of the lunches, and they had like salad to start. And I remember taking out my food scale, and I'm sitting next to fellows, like my peeps, right? And I'm the only one taking out this like collapsible food scale, like weighing out my iceberg lettuce. And like, we're at the OA birthday party, and like, that's fine. Like, I was just so like tight. I was tight where I was just like, no, I just want to know. But today, like, recovery for me is when I'm out in that setting, I don't need to do that, because I have to trust, like, God's with me, and I'm abstinent, and I'm okay. And it was just so cool to partake in a normal dinner and be abstinent, but, like, not have to just feel so different, like, single myself out. Like, I know I'm different. I know I'm not normal. I know that, but it's, like, but I can also, like, have a life and enjoy those things, because for so long,
I think was Kelly muted by chance, or is that my phone?
Mary, we lost her.
We
okay.
Can't hear.
Can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Now
we
I can,
Kelly.
You were muted. Yeah, we can hear you now. Yeah, just go ahead and
geez.
Continue.
Okay, so okay. Sorry. All right, so let's go to, I don't know, like, what you heard last. What did you hear last? What was my last sentence?
For so long. The last thing you said was for so long.
Okay. For so long, it was, and even in recovery, for so long, I just felt very rigid being out and about, having a meal out. Just so scared. I think it was also scared of gaining weight while I'm out. Like, it, just a ton of fear, right? It's not the freedom of the promises that God gives us. So anyway, I had a beautiful time the other night, and I have amazing times out with friends and just being able to enjoy life and to live, because that is the point. So page 58 in How It Works, it says, if you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any lengths to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. And here's the question that we all have to ask ourselves, right? Are we willing to go to any length? And the fork in the road with that is, are we willing to go to any length, or are we not? Are there contingencies? Are there reservations? Are we still not fully surrendered? And guess what? That's okay. That's okay. Maybe you're not ready yet. Maybe you're scared. Maybe you still have more exploring to do. Or maybe, you know, you don't think you need to give things up in order to get this. And all of that is completely okay. But for myself, I know that I need to be willing to go to any length. And I am. I said to my sponsor the other night, I was like, I love this thing at a restaurant. Can I still get it? Do you think it's okay? And she's like, yes. And I'm like, great. If she said no, then I wouldn't. Like, I will do anything. I will literally do anything. If she didn't approve of something, it does hold a lot of weight, because I know that my decision making is not always good. There's a lot of self-will wrapped around in thinking that is God's will. So, yes. Am I willing to go to any length, or am I not? And my answer is yes, I am willing to go to any length. And then, you know, I want to also talk about one more fork in the road before I wrap up with a little more personal experience. In the doctor's opinion, I know I'm going to backtrack, but in the doctor's opinion, when I got recovered again this time around, I told my sponsor, I said, hey, look, I would love for you to sponsor me. But number one is, I can't rack 3 days together, let alone 2 days. If you paid me $1 million, I wouldn't be able to do it. And I also want to point out that I know Bill's story, and I know the doctor's opinion, and I know more about alcohols, and I know we agnostics. And Bill's story, I could recite it upside down, backwards, sideways. If we reread this again, what am I going to get out of this? Like, seriously, like, what's going to be different this time? And she pointed out something to me that was so eye-opening that I had never seen. And it was a game changer. So I want to share that little bit of magic with everyone this morning, if it hasn't jumped out at you when you are reading the doctor's opinion. And it's actually, let's start on the last paragraph of XXVII in the doctor's opinion, where it says, men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems like the only normal one. And that's why the normal way of life for me, the normal path, was to be miserable and in the food. So I want to stick with that because that's what I know. Okay. The last sentence of that paragraph. They are restless. So I'm going to use I. I am restless, irritable, and discontented until I can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks which I see others taking with impunity. And that is a promise, okay? So 10 times out of 10, if I'm feeling restless, irritable, and discontent, when I pick up the food, I'm going to feel immediate ease and comfort. And that's why for so long, it takes so long to get that first couple days, because it works every time. But here's when it doesn't work. When once I pick up that food, the phenomenon of craving develops. And guess what? 10 out of 10 times, the phenomenon of craving develops. And then I pass through the stages of a spree. 10 out of 10 times, it's never just one day. If it's one day and then the next day I'm abstinent, then the next 3 days in a row I'm in the food again. I'm on a spree. Call it whatever you want. That's what's happening. Then I emerge remorseful. 100% I'm remorseful. I'm never on that spree and I'm like, man, that was good. I feel so much better. Never. Nope. Not once. And then this is repeated over and over. And guess what? It's always repeated over and over. Unless I can experience an entire psychic change. Or else. And that's the threat that I'm going to add on there. Or else. I've got nothing else. Like, that is my choice. I need an entire psychic change, or else I'm never going to stop this cycle. So I want to wrap up with saying this, is that I find the hardest part for me through this journey of getting even recovered, and there's still a million hard things after being recovered, obviously, but if you have just a couple days string together, those days are so precious that I used to think, well, if I have 3 days racked together and I'm having urges and a terrible day and it's raining and I'm depressed and down and lonely, I don't have much to lose because I have 3 days. Like, whatever, I start over again. But when you have 3 years, right, and you want to pick up, it's like, man, I have 3 years again. I need to start my day count over. And that's even ego, right, your day count. It's like, all right, who's judging you? It's your life. But it feels like a bigger deal. You have more at stake. But here's the thing. It's like in 8.5 years, I just had day ones racked up. Right now, a little over 3 years, back on the journey, back on the beam, never left the rooms, never stopped coming to meetings, but just 3 years of abstinence, little over, thank you, God. It is just day ones racked together. And every day is a freaking miracle. It is a miracle. Every morning I wake up, God, thank you for another day of abstinence and recovery. Like, I don't have to wake up in a pool of sweat, feeling my stomach. Did I eat? Did I not eat last night? Shoot, I ate, and check the garbage. Just, yep, those wrappers, and make sure I have nothing left in the kitchen because I don't trust myself. I need to throw everything out the next morning. Like, I don't have to live that way today. I don't even have to think, like, I hope I make it to lunch. I hope I make it to dinner. Like, there's so much left to fill in the blanks in my life. My life is so full today. And I know that I have a lot of curveballs thrown my way. But the brightest part of my days is truly when I connect with my fellows, when I speak with my sponsor, when I help other people. The other day, this woman at Costco, she was such an elderly woman, and she had like all this heavy stuff to load into her car. And like, it is literally like a natural reflex to be like, oh my gosh, let me help you. Like, I want to help you. I was at the airport and TSA took away this woman. She bought all these like jams to bring home to, I guess, her grandkids, and they confiscated them. And she was like so upset about it. And I like felt for her. I'm like, of course, like they're expensive. And like, yeah. And so once she got through TSA, she was clearly upset. And I actually got her name and number. And I was like, I'm going to buy you these jams and I'm going to mail them to you, because we were in Maine and they're local to Maine and my family's in Maine. So I could easily get them for her and ship them to her. And then believe it or not, a store in the airport had the jams, and I bought the ones that I saw the flavors, because right, I can see things today. And I made note of the flavors and I bought her the jams, and I texted her, what gate are you at? And she wrote me back and I brought her all the jams. And it was like, she couldn't even believe it. And for me, it was like, that was such a like no-brainer. Like, I'm grateful I have the ability to do that. I'm grateful I have enough awareness of things around me to be able to get my head out of my butt to realize like the world is bigger than just me. And those things fill me up more than anything in the entire world. And that is my purpose today. That is truly my purpose, is to make other people's lives better. And you know, I walk around oftentimes with a God glow, right? Like, what's that? Is that a new foundation? Or like, did you get a haircut? Or you must be in a really good mood, right? And it's just like, no, like for today, like life is good. Like life is good. Like I'm okay. You know, I don't know what's next for me. But like, I'm truly okay. The fact that I get to do service like this, like the ask to speak, is like the most incredible honor in the entire world. And lastly, you know, it's New Year's, right? Like the elephant in the room, everyone's the New Year's resolutions, January 1st. I mean, I cannot think of a time where recently, like within the past 10 years, where I was like, New Year's resolution to lose weight. Like, what a gift. Like my New Year's resolution, it's just like another day. Like, it's just another day of like, God, thank you for another day of abstinence and recovery. Like, show me how I can help your children today. And like, can't wait to see what this year brings. But it's not like, God, I really want a husband. I really want kids. I really want this dream job. I really want this dream husband. I want to make a lot of money. Like, I can't, like, it's not a genie in the bottle anymore. And sometimes most of the time I really wish it was, but it's just not. And so right now when I pray, it's so open-ended. It's like when I got that call that, you know, my contract was terminated, it's like, God, I don't like what's going on right now, but I trust you and I love you and I accept it and I don't like it. But I trust you, and whatever your will is for me, thank you. And that's it. And I don't even have to fully believe it, but I just go through the motions, and like, that's my role today. So such an honor. Thank you so much. And yeah, happy new year, happy healthy new year. And whatever direction you choose with the fork in the road, like, please, please keep coming back. Choose God, choose yourself, choose recovery. That is the only correct path. So thank you, and that's it. I'll pass.
Kelly, thanks so much for your vulnerability and sharing your personal story of transformation. We're just, you know, very appreciative of your authenticity. So, yeah, thanks for that presentation this morning. And we're going to transition in just a moment to our Q&A portion of the presentation. But before we do, a couple of things. One, Let me give you the share ID for the presentation this morning. That number is 22,033. That's 22033. And hang around after the Q&A session and we stop the recording, we will ask Kelly D for her contact information. So now, if you have a question for Kelly, questions only, please, we appreciate that. Press star one and give me your first name and last initial. Who has a question for Kelly?
Marcia D. R.
I heard Jessica. Was that Marcia?
Yes.
Okay, I got Jessica and Marcia.
Marisa G.
Marisa.
Chris.
I got Chris.
Larry G.
Hey, Larry. Who else? Okay, we could start with that.
Deb.
So here's who I heard. Was it Deb?
Deb A, yes.
Okay, Deb. Anybody else? Okay. So we're going to go with Jessica. We'll start with Jessica, Marcia, Marissa, Chris, Larry, and Deb. So, Jessica, good morning. What question do you have for our speaker this morning?
Good morning. Can you hear me?
I can. You bet.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, cool. So I'm very new in the program, and I'm so appreciative of this vivid description of how hard these days are, because that's how I feel. And so my question is, what do you do when the food that was on your plan isn't available to you? And how do you manage when your sponsor tells you to just stick to the plan? And like, I have three kids, like going to the grocery store and like cooking the food that I had on my plan is so hard. Like, I just want to know how you get through those moments. Thank you.
Thank you so much for the question.
And I'm sorry, could I ask, how do I put myself back on mute?
Yeah, just press star one again. Yeah.
Thanks. Okay, thank you. Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much for that question. And I get it that your hands are full. And I think, you know, the most important thing, you're right in the beginning of getting abstinent and maintaining that abstinence is, you know, black and white when it comes to the food. Like, has to be clean, follow your food plan. And when your sponsor says that, I know she's really just, you know, we think too much. And when we have a plan with our food, it's like, we don't have to think about it. It's just there. Like my first couple of days, like I remember salmon was on my food plan. Eating that made me so nauseous, but like, that's what I said I was going to eat. And so that's what I did. And so for you with your life being really busy, then I would simplify it. And I don't want to like give food advice when I share my information, feel free to call me. I always recommend a nutritionist. I'm sure you have one if you have a food plan, but just keep it simple, you know, keep it simple. And so if you can have something complicated that you wrote down, like think about what you're going to make that's reasonable for you and then make that and follow through on it, because nothing feels better when we follow through on our word, especially in the beginning of, you know, recovery. It's like I'm so used to just not following through, also not caring. And when I like know I follow directions, like that feels so good. So think about what's reasonable for you and make that a priority when the kids are sleeping or whatever it is. Like when there's a rule, there's a way, and you're not alone. And I get it's inconvenient, but like we have no choice. So that's how I feel.
Okay, thanks for the answer on that, Kelly, and thanks for the question, Jessica. And if you guys would give your last initials when you come up. Next up, we have Marcia, followed by Marissa. Marcia, good morning to you.
Good morning. This is Marcia D in Ohio. And Kelly, thank you so much. I related to a lot of what you shared, just so very real. My question is, I appreciated what you said. It was actually very validating that you couldn't get those first few days alone. You just couldn't pull that off. So I'm just wondering if you could elaborate more on what you and your sponsor did during those first few days. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Thanks, Marcia. So it's a good question. So I'm one of those people, like overachiever, when it's my first day, it's like, I want to work out. I want to organize my apartment. I want to do this big grocery shopping. I'm going to buy new Tupperware, new candle, like I'm ready to go. But my sponsor the first day, she literally said to me, all you have to do is eat your abstinent food and go to bed with your head on the pillow at night abstinent. And I was like, wait, what? Like she literally said, eat your abstinent food and go to bed. If you have to take naps between each meal, take naps in between each meal. And I was like, okay, like that's what was required of me. And I could handle that because I was so miserable and so sick and had no motivation whatsoever to do anything. But as I said in the previous question, it's like, if I follow directions and just do what I'm told, I don't really have to think. I don't have to make a decision. I'm just kind of like, this is what I'm told to do. This is what I'm going to do. So my suggestion to you is just keep it so simple. Like you don't have to figure it out. You don't have to figure out, well, what am I going to do about my friend's birthday in February? And my husband wants to go away mid-January. And like, should I start looking at the hotel menu? And like, no, like for today, it just has to be so simple. And so don't think about big picture. Try to stay so much in the day and just like, what can I do today to get my head on the pillow tonight? Abstinent. Like that's the only task you have to do. So just try not to put so much on your plate, no pun intended, but just keep it simple and much more easier said than done, but it's possible. So try to do that.
All right, next up we have Marissa, followed by Chris. Good morning, Marissa. Marissa, press star one.
Good morning. Thank you so much, Kelly. All the positive affirmations in your talk this morning were amazing. The part that I really would like to ask more about is you talked about on the cuspix of relapse, and you were talking about the spirituality is off. It just struck a note with me. Could you expound upon that? Are there certain signs that you see? And when you do see those signs, what are your tools? How do you turn back to the spirituality and away from self? And thank you very much.
Oh, thanks so much for the question. So I know when things are rocky, it's similar in Bill's story when he gets into a brawl with the taxi driver, right? In Bill's story. And it's like, how do you get in a fight with a taxi driver? Like they're literally driving you from A to B where you want to go. Like what is the issue with the taxi driver, right? And so for me, it's like when I just get so irritable at the littlest things, like everything is bothering me, go back to the bedevilments. Like I am just in it. So what do? I usually call my sponsor and she always directs me back to service, call someone who may be struggling, see how you can help a friend. Or sometimes for me, it's self-care. Like what can I do for myself? Go exercise, go clean something, like do something pampering, which is usually the counterintuitive of what I want to do in that moment. So something spiritual is just, who would God have me be? Because right now, usually when I'm in that rut, it's because I'm so deep into self. I'm either fearful of something coming up, where I'm at, I'm in a fight with somebody. I just, like, something's bothering me, something's unresolved, and I don't know what it is. Like, maybe journal. I live in Florida, so the sunshine really helps, like, being outside. But usually it is just service, and it doesn't always have to be in program. Like, it truly can be, like, helping someone that you see, or I don't know, putting your grocery cart back in the parking lot. It's just those esteemable acts that build me up because I'm doing something for somebody else. And that's really the only way to do it. You know, when I was working, it's just like, just having really good conversations with people on the phone, giving someone a compliment, you know, all those things kind of negate those negative self-talk, the negative voices inside of you that tell you you're not good enough. Because for me, it always stems back to like self-hatred. Like it always goes back to like how much I hate myself. So I walk around acting like that. You know, I just have that look on my face and that bitterness. So the way to lift that, I truly believe, is like how to get out of yourself. And whatever that looks like for you, whatever fills your cup, whatever brings you joy, like do that. But it usually is outside of myself, because I, with my own willpower, cannot get out of my own way. I can't do it. So that's what helps me.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Marissa. Okay, next up with the question, we have Chris, followed by Larry. Chris, good morning.
This is Chris G. in Tennessee, and I appreciate your story, and I especially appreciate your shares of the big book, the share what you read. And I want to ask you about taking care of other people. In the past, my action of step 12 was to take care of other people. And I have two progressive diseases, and I've been sick, and I couldn't take care of myself, and I had a lot of grief of not being able to take care of other people, like physically. And it turns out I can take care, I can be useful without taking care of other people. But I have a neighbor right across the hall who's very sick. He's very sick, and I won't open his door because he's so needy, and I feel remorse. How would you deal with people wanting to be physically taken care of, and you not being able to physically take care of them, and they're being so needy and not open to spirituality?
Yeah, thank you for the question. I'm sorry that you're not feeling well. I think with this, it sparks like the people pleasing kind of defect that can crop up. And if you're not physically capable or don't feel like that's something that's going to be helpful, I mean, it is what it is, right? If someone wants to run a marathon with you and you don't have legs, then like, you can't run the marathon. So if you're not in a position to be helpful physically because you physically can't, then it's not your fault. And even if you were physically capable and it didn't feel right to you, it wasn't an appropriate situation, that's also okay. So I think boundaries and people pleasing, those are the two words that come up for me. And, you know, ways that you can be kind. If you want a card, thinking of you, I hope you feel better, like Happy New Year, whatever it is. I mean, you know, you can call me after and we can talk about, you know, some things, but I mean, it's obviously a tough situation, but I think you've got to put your oxygen mask on before being able to help anybody else. So I think focus on you getting better, and any other service or niceties that you can do, that's great, but not to compromise your own well-being at the same time.
Thanks for the question, Chris. Okay, next up we have Larry, followed by Deb. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Larry. This is Larry G. from California. Larry, you do such a brilliant job moderating this. I really appreciate your service. Kelly, I am so glad I was on this call this morning. It was just so inspirational, especially talking about as recovered member of this program, but still, you know, dealing with the dark side of this disease like I do. Really appreciate your vulnerability. My question is, this is my observation. Doesn't mean it's true, but my observation is that we get recovery and abstinence mixed up. We think that they're the same term. And I'm just wondering, you've been around a while, I'm wondering how you define, what is your experience, Freak and Hope, in defining the difference between recovery and abstinence? Thank you so much. I'll take
it. Yeah. Sure. Yeah, sorry. Jumped on that one without even finishing because I'm fired up about it. You can't have abstinence without recovery, and you can't have recovery without abstinence. So they go hand in hand. And when I separate the two, where I was living for 8.5 years with the abstinence piece, but not the recovery piece, there's an expiration date. When recovery and abstinence are together, there doesn't have to be an expiration date. Relapse is not inevitable. Even if you're someone who's a chronic relapser, the next time it happens, it doesn't have to be inevitable just because that's been your story. And for me, is like a dry drunk. You know, I can follow the food plan, I can lose the weight, but I'm on thin ice because if I don't have that spiritual basis, it's temporary. There's a crack. And it's, you know, it's like the boat with the hole in it, right? I'm slowly sinking. So it doesn't really matter what I do physically, whether it be, you know, continue to weigh and measure my food, weigh out my water, whatever the case is. I was that tight about everything. But at the end of the day, like, I'm miserable. So, like, what's the point? Like, for me, I was literally like, what's the point in being in such great shape and looking a certain way when I'm miserable? Like, I'd rather have my food and be huge than be so tiny and rigid and holding on for dear life and miserable. Like, what is the point in that? So they go hand in hand. It's non-negotiable. You can't have one without the other long term. And yeah, I think abstinence is so important. It's everything, right? It's everything in the beginning, and it's everything throughout working the steps, because we're not going to get the promises if we're not abstinent. So there's no shortcut with that. But you can't achieve that recovery without being abstinent, because when the physical allergy and the obsession of the mind is there, it's just not going to work. So recovery has a spiritual component along with the abstinence. But you can have abstinence without the spiritual component, and then there's an expiration date on that. So I hope that sheds some light on my perspective.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Larry. Okay, so we have Deb with a question next, and then we'll open it up. If there are more folks, we should have some more time. So we're going to press star one when we get to that point. Deb, what question do you have for Kelly?
Good morning. This is Deb A. Thank you for your service, Larry and Kelly. Absolutely wonderful special edition. I'm going to listen to it again, but I don't know if I missed something, and I get this from potential sponsors a lot. I've read the big book over and over. I've read the chapter on doctor's opinion. I've read, you know, Bill's story over and over. What am I going to get out of it this time? That's my question. How can you answer
Yeah.
that?
Of course. I mean, I asked that question to myself a million times, especially this time around when I've been in the program for so long. And it's like, what is going to be different? And I was just told, like, you have to literally, like, get a brand new big book, start from scratch, and look at the text as if this is the first time. Like, you don't know what's next. Even if you do, you just have to keep that open mind. Because if you think about it, the number of people who do go through relapse and do rework the steps, even when I rework the steps in recovery, it's like you always get something new because you go through this with a guide. So you always do get something new from anyone else's perspective that you go through it with. There's things that are triggered or sparked through those words. This text is meant to be read over and over again. And so, you know, like I said, if you're a visual person, you just need a new book, do the new book. But from my experience, you know, as I spoke about in the doctor's opinion, the promises of the disease, because you hear so much, you know, the promises of recovery, right? The promises of the fifth step, the ninth step. But it's like, when I hear the promise of the disease, I had read this book so many times, and I had never seen it like that. So I think it's just more, it's going through it with somebody and going through it with your sponsees and asking them to relate and see what comes up for them. Because I learned so much going through the book with people who have never even seen the text, or with people who have done this 12 steps in other programs using the same text and just picking up new insight. So it's like, pray for that open mind and a new set of eyes every single time you go through it, because there is always something more to get. And it feels really good to go through this text over and over, because it feels like I'm doing something right, like for my soul, for my recovery. Like, that's what I'm told to do, is stay so fresh and green with this text. So, like, I just continue to pray for openness and a new set of eyes and a new book and a new highlighter and a sharp pen and just continue to dive in and be a student, you know? That's what I suggest.
All right. Thanks, Deb. Okay. We should have time for some more questions here if we have them. So
Rivka.
If you have a question, I'm sorry, was it Rivka? No, that's okay. Uh-huh. Okay, I got Rivka. Who else?
Claudia, California.
Linda G. from Alabama.
Okay, let me, hold on 1 second. I have Rivka,
Hanayeta. Okay.
Yeah, I heard you, and I got that, and Rivka, and Hanayeta, and then someone from Alabama.
Linda G.
Linda. Thank you, Linda. And there was one other person, I think we'll cap it there, that I missed. So,
Claudia, California.
Claudia. Okay, And we'll see if we can get to you there. We're going to hold it there. Alexis, oh, it's so nice to hear you. I don't know if we'll be able to get that far, but we are going to get Kelly's. We are going to squeeze this contact information out of her. So you could call her. Anybody could call her. So let's
Thanks,
Alexis. We're going to start with Rivka, followed by Hanayeta. Rivka, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much, Larry, and thank you so much, Kelly, for your very moving share. And my question is, how does your relationship with God today, how does that make a difference in your recovery and your life that you didn't have for those 8 years? How did you come to grow that relationship in a way that impacted you to have recovery today?
Oh, thanks so much for the question. And that is a good one, right? So I think for me is I know that God is everything and God is nothing. So when I know that in the deepest, innermost part of myself, today, like I start my day with God and I end my day with God, whatever that looks like. And, you know, I think 10 steps, to be honest with you, is like a huge part of the maintenance of working the steps, because before I was just living so much in 6 and 7, my defects and just, you know, my defects fuel my self-hatred. And I continue to bring up the self-hatred because that is a constant struggle for me of like loving who I am and the dialogue that I say to myself every single day, the way that I speak with myself. I have to make such a conscious effort to like try to be positive because I know I'm a good person and have a good heart. And God is responsible for all those good attributes within myself. And so for me, I give credit where credit's due, and it's always to God. And I always say, like, when you think of connecting the dots in your life, you can only connect the dots when you're looking backwards. And so for me, when I'm going through a dot, which I'm going through now, I don't understand the full picture that's being created behind me, but it's all going to make sense. And I really, really trust and believe that. And I get that trust through other people. I see the God working in their life, and I see how people handle adversity with this program and how life just knocks us down. And it's like, I want that. So like, why don't I just practice the way this person handled it? Like, if it works for them, why can't it work for me? So it's like, I know when I'm just restless, irritable, and discontent in the bedevilments, this time around, I do a 10-step. I speak with my sponsor. I try to help someone else. I make sure my home is clean. I make sure my bed is made. Like sometimes it's just so simple tasks where it's like I need to feel God and I need to feel organized. And I also need to get out of myself, because when I keep things to myself and I keep that anger, that fear, it just bottles up and grows. And that's where I unleash. And that's where I do things and say things that I don't mean. And I can't afford to not like myself today. So that's that.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thanks, Rivka, for the question. So we'll questions only. We'll move on. Hanayeta followed by Linda. Hi, Hanayeta.
Thank you, Larry K. This is Hanayeta R. from Texas. And thank you, Kelly. Wow. I know I just have to keep it to a question, so I won't go into anything, but we were talking about the bedevilments. You said that if you feel like you have a pebble in your shoe, then you go to the bedevilments. How do the bedevilments help you? I mean, I don't grasp them. And how you can use them in your everyday life.
Yeah, great question. So
they don't help me in the sense of that's what I strive for, but they help me in a sense of where I'm at spiritually. So if I have a if I know that I'm struggling with my personal relationships, if I'm snappy with my mom, if I have a significant other and I can't stand anything they're doing, if I'm in incredible fear with work and not hitting a number and not, you know, hitting my quota, all these things, like, that is my barometer. That's my rubric to see how I am spiritually. So that way I know, oh, I'm in the bedevilment. It's where I don't want to be, but it's a thing, right? It's human nature. Like, I do have those qualities. And when I have enough of those bedevilments in my everyday life, I know that something's off spiritually, because God wants us to move fluidly with ease and comfort. God doesn't want us to live in fear. God doesn't want us to struggle. So when I do feel like I'm swimming upstream and life keeps knocking me down, there's something off with my spiritual fitness. And that helps me know that I have to recalibrate. And so they help because it's a measurement tool that's correlated with my spiritual fitness, if that makes sense.
Thanks for the question, honey. Thanks, Kelly. Okay, next up we have Linda, followed by Claudia. We'll see where we get here. Linda, good morning.
Hi. Thank you, Kelly, for that beautiful qualification, and thank you, Larry, for managing this meeting. I just realized that I have a lifetime illness, that there's no graduation date, and it sent me into shock. How do I manage that information?
Say that one more time.
I just realized that this is a lifetime disease, and it gets stronger every day, that there is no graduation date. How do I manage that information?
Well, I think it's good news. I think it's good news because when you... I have a follow-up question with that, but we won't get into it. But it shouldn't really get stronger, the disease, if you're working the program. Can sometimes here and there, but I think it's good news because I don't have to think like one day I'm going to be able to eat like a normal person. So it's kind of, it's calming for me because it's about living in acceptance and surrendering to this is who I am. So how can I have the best life knowing these things about myself? And to have that awareness of who I am and where I need to color in between the lines, that also gives me so much freedom because I don't need to figure it out. I don't need to guess why I can't stop eating or why I can't stop thinking about something. I know why, and I know what I need to do about it. And these are the deck of cards that I was dealt, and I don't mind it because I have a way of life and a way of living and how to handle anything that comes my way in a spiritual manner. And people spend their whole life trying to chase something that they don't even know, which is usually this spiritual path.
Thanks so much for the question, Linda. Okay, Claudia, you're up. It's your turn. Good morning.
Claudia, California, forgive me if this is a dumb question, but I'm 23 days abstinent of sugar. So in your share, you said that you ate a piece of cake in a very long table. You had a piece of cake and that was okay. So I'm just curious if that, how come that doesn't break abstinence? And again, I'm new and I'm sorry to be cruel. Thank you.
Yeah. So big, correction. I never said cake. I did not eat a piece of cake at that table. I ate abstinently, and it was such a gift because I was able to be present with my family. So all abstinent food, no cake. If I ate cake, I would not be on this line right now speaking and sharing my experience, strength, and hope. So yeah, no sugar whatsoever for me at that table or anywhere in my food plan.
Me too. Okay. Thanks, Claudia. Okay. So we wrap up. Final question. Drum roll. Anne, good morning to you.
Oh, appreciate Anne. You, Larry. Thank you. And you, especially Kelly. Quick question. Can you pinpoint when an event, maybe the date of your, that God rearranged your heart and your mind and you had the spiritual awakening?
Yeah. I mean, I started the steps with my sponsor November 18th. And I think truly throughout the process, but I do remember day eight working the steps, my eighth day in, I really had a transformation because day seven was incredibly difficult for me where I would have done anything to pick up the food. And I remember calling one of my spiritual lifesavers and she said, Kelly, what time is it? I remember it being 4 p.m. And she's like, what time are you going to bed? And I was like, 10 o'clock. And she said to me, are you able to feel this discomfort for 6 more hours if I told you the next day you won't feel it at all? And I was like, well, yeah, I can handle pain for 6 hours if you promised it would go away, but it's not going to go away. And she's like, just pretend to believe what I'm saying. And if you don't feel like it's going to go, if you feel differently in the morning, you have those same urges, then eat. And guess what? I didn't give in for those 6 hours. And the next morning I was free from then on and I had no more urges. So that was like day seven was when I was like, whoa, because so often I would give up right before that hump of getting over to the next side of things. And that was truly transformational for me where I was like, whoa, like I don't need to pick up. That's the disease telling me that I'm not gonna make it another moment without ingesting that food. And it's been a lie.
Do you remember which step? Was that step five that you felt the relief?
I don't know what step we were on at that point. It could have been step two or three. Yeah, it was early on because we were only like 8 days in. Could have been step three, perhaps, where I believed that there was a power greater than myself, but I didn't trust that it would help me to get through what I needed. I believed that it existed, but I didn't believe that it could do for me what I couldn't do for myself.
Beautiful.
Thanks so much. Yeah, thanks, Anne, for the question. And Kelly, oh my gosh, you gave us such a nice addition to our podcast archive. So thank you for that. So appreciative. And yeah. So we're going to wrap up the meeting, and please stay tuned because as soon as I read from page 164, we're going to ask Kelly for her contact information. So let me do that now. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until